KPCW News Time now, 8:09. Good morning. Stay tuned. Coming up in a minute, we'll be checking in with Midway Mayor-elect Celeste Johnson. She's got a rundown on her priorities once she assumes the leadership position next month. Park City Councilmember Tim Henney with a recap about last night's Park City Council meeting. SCPW, Summit Community Power Works Executive Director Aaron Bragg discussing their Watts Down, Lights Up campaign. And finally, conversation with Park City Community Foundation Communications Manager Deanna Rhodes, along with Board Member Ton Raffa. They've got details on this year's giving guide. Stay tuned. It's 8:19 now. Good morning. Well, in November, Celeste Johnson won the election for Midway Mayor, unseating the incumbent Colleen Bonner with 57% of the vote. Celeste joins me now in the studio with a preview of her agenda for the coming 4 years. Good morning to you and congratulations.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Yeah. So the incumbent mayor of Heber City, Alan McDonald, also unseated with 59% of the vote going to or towards his opponent. Both communities obviously wanting change in leadership. What are your thoughts about what happened?
I agree. I think there's time for a new perspective, and that time has come. So both Heber and Midway facing very similar situations with a lot of growth that's unprecedented, growth that is going so quickly, it's hard for our codes to keep up. So I think that new perspective in how to attack some of those problems is what the voters are looking for.
Yeah, do you think it's a demographic change, just the people moving into the communities that this is happening?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. What we've got is a swell of folks who have moved to these rural communities because they are rural communities. And, you know, some people say, oh, now that you're here, you want to lock the gates. And I don't think that's it at all. I think we come to these areas and want to protect what's there as much as we can, slow the growth as much as we can, and make sure that that growth is in keeping with our rural character.
Yeah. So how long have you been in Midway?
Full-time, 9 years.
Okay. But have been there part-time for...
Uh-huh. We've had a home there for 12 years, and it's just you come into Midway and you feel the weight of the world leave your shoulders. It's just a very peaceful, wonderful place to live.
Yeah. In terms of is there a strong business sentiment, pro-sentiment for those living in Midway?
Not necessarily. Midway tends to be a little bit more of a bedroom community. We've only, I think, 3% of our property is zoned for commercial, so it wasn't ever planned to be a business type of a community. Having said that, I think there are certain kinds of businesses that could provide some economic strength to our town.
Yeah, that certainly helps pay the bills.
Exactly,
know?
Exactly. If you don't have some of that, you're looking at all the bills being paid in property tax, and that's a concern.
Yeah. So in terms of your priorities for the first 100 days, we like to hear about that with the change in leadership. I mean, do you have that agenda?
I do. As unexciting as it sounds, one of our first priorities will be budget. Looking at our plan moving forward, in 2020, we'll lose a fairly substantial resort tax because of our growth. And so we need to make sure we have a plan in place so that we can do more than just cut services and protect property taxes. We've got a lot of codes that need code text amendment changes. Those are the things that will help protect the rural character of Midway. And, you know, it's the type of thing where we don't have a code for how high a utility pole can be in our town. So those are things that weren't concerns before, and now they are. And if we don't jump right on those code text amendments, we're going to be in trouble.
I want to get back to the whole utility issue, but in terms of losing that resort city sales tax, how much money was that, and why is it being lost?
So that it's based on a percentage of how many nightly rentals you have compared to full-time residences. And because of the full-time residential growth that we've experienced, we are out of whack with that percentage. We have been for a while, but they don't adjust it until a census. So in 2020, there will be a census that will show that we no longer qualify for that. It's about $500,000.
Wow. Is there a way to bring that back? I mean, you've got the hotel rooms, or the growth is just too much.
Right? Well, I'm sure always a way. I mean, one of my least favorite things is to have someone say to me, oh, there's nothing you can do about that. So, no, there is always a way. And perhaps the current resorts would want to consider adding more rooms. It doesn't seem likely at this point.
All right. Well, let's turn to this issue of utilities. And talk a little bit about the agreement that your predecessor and Alan McDonald, as the chair of the Heber Light and Power Board, entered into to install high power transmission lines through Heber and Midway. It looks like this group Volt has now some 2,000 signatures opposing this. Is it too late?
Again, don't ever tell me it's too late or that there's nothing that can be done. I don't believe it is too late. Very interestingly, as very thoughtful questions have been posed to Heber Light and Power, they haven't had answers. And at the most recent county council meeting, they were instructed by the county council to go back and get some of those answers before they reapply. So an agreement has been entered in between Rocky Mountain Power and Heber Light and Power, but that doesn't mean it has to move forward. Heber Light and Power doesn't have the easements they need yet. They need height variances passed by the County Planning Commission. There's a lot that still needs to be done. And we're saying, you know what, why would you run that right up this incredible valley? There's got to be other options. And let's look at what those are first. And burying those lines is a strong contender.
I feel like you're inheriting Park City's problem. We went through this battle a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly been, the thing that, okay, these lines are coming up our valley because Park City didn't want them. We haven't, in my opinion, gotten a real straight answer about that. But, you know, we need power. We understand that. You guys need power, too. But we got to look at how we go about doing that and saving our environment.
So they're asking for a height variance from, I think, both the Board of Adjustment and then the Planning Commission?
Correct. The Board of Adjustment did take this item off their agenda this week because of the Planning Commission's decision. So fortunately, I think some very clear minds are ruling right now in our government, and they're saying, hang on, guys, you don't know exactly what's going to happen yet. And until you can give us those answers, we're not going to make any rulings.
What did Planning Commission decide on? To hold off until they got some answers?
They've basically continued the item into February for sure. Possibly, they left it up to Heber Light and Power. Look, you guys, take as long as you need. Get these answers.
So what's the proposal? I mean, we've got big power poles there already. They just want to make them bigger?
A lot bigger, right? And what's very discouraging is that we're going from very small little wooden rural-looking poles, if you want to call it that, to those enormous 110-foot steel poles that are 6 feet wide at the base, six arms coming off of them, increasing the power that can come through our valley dramatically. It's hard to it's hard to understand how our little valley needs all of that. So clearly some of this is to help Orem, some of it's to help Park City. Again, we're not sure how much or why or where, and people want those answers.
Yeah, and that's something I think the group Volt has suggested, that there is no benefit to the additional capacity coming to the Heber Valley. It's all for somewhere else?
Right. That's how it feels, although they're saying that isn't true. So, again, we need some clarity. Volt has done an amazingly terrific job of staying very level-headed, going to other communities and getting answers, doing research, and then bringing that research to Heber Light and Power. So they're not saying stop and leave us alone. They're saying, have you looked at this and have you looked at this? They're being very, very logical about it.
Midway just coming off the 6 months of a building moratorium that ended mid this month. The objective was to rewrite the planning code. Some asked that moratorium be extended. Legally, that couldn't be done?
No, that's gray area for sure. Extension is probably an incorrect word. There are some legalities involved with an extension. What many of us had asked for was a second moratorium to be put in place, piggybacked with the first one. That probably could have been done. And, we're not trying to stick it to the developers. We're not saying we don't want you here. We're saying if we don't have time to update our codes because we're too busy processing applications for building, then we're going to continue reacting to what's coming to our valley rather than creating a vision for our valley and then making sure the pieces are in place to accommodate that vision.
So how high of a priority is that on your agenda?
That's very high. Yep. We will, we have such a small staff. You know, we've only got 27, and that includes our part-time people. That includes our maintenance people. You know, you compare that to a city like Park City. So our staff, if they're worrying about building applications, they can't be spending time on codes. So we've got to create an environment where the applications are slowed so that codes can be updated.
So what happened with that request then for a second moratorium? Was it denied or not even voted on?
It was not even put on the agenda. So we had requested it be put to the agenda so that we could have a discussion about it, that we could hear all sides of what our city attorney had to say about it. And our current elected officials refused to put it on the agenda.
So could you bring that back then?
Absolutely.
And you plan to?
I do.
All right. What about the changes that have been made? Have there been some?
Very few. They have created two committees that will be advisory to the City Council, an open space bond committee, open space committee to look at an open space bond, a parks and trails committee. They did have changed the water requirements needed for a piece of property to be developed. Basically, that's about it. And we have code text amendments where we're trying to look at setbacks. It's one of the things that keeps a rural community looking rural. If you don't have buildings right up against the road, protects your view corridors. That code text amendment, multiple others, were tabled. The City Council did disagree with the Planning Commission on whether or not sensitive lands could be counted as open space. Currently, they cannot be. 100% of sensitive lands can be counted as your open space. So the Planning Commission recommended that that be changed, and the City Council didn't agree. So that's another code text amendment we really need to look at. Sensitive lands need to not just be protected, but we also need, in addition to that, open space that can be used. Sensitive lands can't be used.
So is it too late to amend the code text then for height of utility lines?
Actually, we don't have a code in place, so we have to write one. And no, it's not too late. No, we've advised Heber Light and Power that we will be writing one.
All right. But even though that's already underway, I mean, is it somewhat under existing code or?
No, not for Midway. And that's one of the difficulties with what's being proposed with this high transmission power lines. It goes through multiple jurisdictions, and they haven't brought all those players to the table in a way that people feel informed.
Finally, where do things stand with the open space efforts? Last summer, folks were disappointed when the City Council elected not to allow a bond on last November's ballot.
Right. And a lot of people want a bond on the ballot. They want the people to be able to make that decision. And I support that. I'm not, there's a lot of work that was done to determine, first of all, if people could support a bond, and second of all, what was their tolerance level? How much would they actually be willing to pay for that? We had over 600 respondents. That would have been enough to have forced the issue to a ballot had it been done earlier in the year. So unfortunately, we had been given some misinformation, and that wasn't able to happen. It's certainly something I'm willing to put on the ballot, and the City Council will need to discuss that as well.
Okay. Again, the deal is that even if the bond approves, you don't have to sell the bonds.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That money could sit there and never, ever be used. It just meant that if property like your Osteogothorpe project up here, you know, if something beautiful like that came up, we would have the revenue to be able to jump on that opportunity. And right now we don't.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Celeste?
You know, it's just an exciting time. I believe that people have really rallied to protect our rural towns up here. And you folks are going through it. We're going through it. Heber's going through it. It's going to be interesting to see how the state legislature responds to our requests now.
Okay. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
That's Celeste Johnson, again, the newly elected mayor of Midway. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council held a joint meeting with most of the members of the Planning Commission with really no new information presented that hadn't already been presented on Wednesday night. In the studio with her final interview with KPCW is outgoing City Council member Cindy Matsumoto. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, let's just start with Treasurer, and then we'll kind of move on through the rest of the meeting. The planning staff and the planner for the new applicant of Treasure Park City, which is Park City 2 LLC, Craig Call, pretty much went over what they did the previous night, we heard some planning commissioners wondering why it was important for them to be there last night as well. Why do you think it was important that they sat through that again?
Well, you know, I think it was mostly so that if there was new information or if the council had, you know, when they presented to the planning commission, there was, is there a fatal flaw with, you know, well, the way we're going with this settlement agreement, is there something that you can't live with? They wanted to hear from the planning commission on Wednesday night. And then for last night, it was the same thing for the council. And so it was, you know, when and another opportunity for the public also. So if there was something that the public brought up that the planning commission wanted to hear. So it is a fast track that it's on. And so the more that the planning commission and the city council can hear the same information as well as the public, and we can get everybody's input and sort of hear it at the same time. So I think that was the point of it last night.
Okay. Staff told council that they didn't need direction, but they did need to know if they were going in the wrong direction. Are they?
No, that was, yeah, that was, is there a fatal flaw? Well, I don't think so. I mean, I'm thrilled as a community member that we have this chance to, you know, reach a settlement agreement and have a different project than we would have had up there. Something, you know, smaller, and hopefully it'll be less impactful on Old Town and, you know, fit into our neighborhood better. So I think that, you know, I think we are going in the right direction. And, you know, what I think was heard at Planning Commission and then from the public and from the city council is, you know, a smaller buildings that can be less seen, that aren't looming over Old Town, will be much better.
Unlike most joint meetings, there was very little discussion last night. Is it just too early? Is that?
Well, it was, you know, it was a joint meeting in the fact that they were there, but, you know, I think, you know, really it was an opportunity for them to hear what, if there was new public input and we don't have all the details, and we didn't want to discuss things that we don't have the details of. So
what we've got in front of us are three plans. All three show development outside of the current existing MPD boundaries. You heard from John Staffschult yesterday telling you that to build outside of the already approved footprint is counterintuitive, especially if it's a smaller project. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think the point was to have less density. And the homes that maybe will be a buffer to a hotel or certainly, you know, not have the same impact, they needed roads that the hotel doesn't. And there won't be as much excavation. That was one thing that the neighborhood didn't like, that the community didn't like, is just ripping up the hillside and putting big scar on there. But it does need more roads. And so I think that because the other one was going to be front-loaded into a very deep underground parking, and so you didn't need to you need more space to have a road and put in this other stuff. So I don't think it's counterintuitive.
All right. During regular session, council passed a Let It Snow resolution unanimously.
Yes.
Is it going to work?
I was driving over here, and I don't know if I heard something wrong, but I heard 5 inches. I don't know exactly when it was. Didn't you hear the same thing?
Yeah.
5 or 6 inches? Yeah, I think
okay,
it works.
So you guys made it work.
Well, when is it going to happen? I didn't hear that.
We're going to get a couple of storms over the next several days.
So, well, yay. Yeah. Well, good job.
But just a little
itty-bitty job, council.
Thing.
Well, it won't seem itty-bitty when you have, you know, and, you know, the ski resorts do such a good job of making snow. And so I think the tourists are having a good time, and it'll be a good season.
The issue of social equity, wanted to take more public comment on this. The decision, and I guess you probably agree with it, was to let the new city council seated determine whether or not this moves from a high priority to a critical priority. Can you talk to me, give me some idea of what that means in terms of shifting it from a high to a critical priority? I mean, we know it means more money and more staff time, but is anything specifically on what that would mean?
Well, it's a different commitment level. I mean, it was something that if we don't do something about it now, it will drastically change what Park City's like. That's how we first defined our two critical priorities. If we don't do something about affordable housing and transportation, we're the first two. And actually those, as I said last night, I think those fit into social equity. And and then we added our net zero, our sustainability critical goal, because, you know, we are the environment here. Our town is very tied to that. And so it's, you know, crucial that we pay attention to that. So so it is more, it's more staff time. It's just a different emphasis. It's, you know, if we don't do something now, we could lose Park City.
Yeah.
And this might be, you know, lose the people of Park City.
Right. So, I mean, one of the ideas I had heard is that perhaps the city would go back to, I mean, we used to have a gal that worked with the Park City Police Department, Shelley Weber Weiss, who was a liaison between the Latino community and the police department. And she was kind of their advocate. I mean, is that something that we would do, maybe on a full-time position? I know we do have one police department.
Yeah, that's certainly something that will, I mean, will be discussed and decided upon. That's one of the, you know, the goals, but to, you know, try to figure out how we're going to do this. But, you know, so social equity is really for, you know, anybody that feels marginalized in the community. So it could be, you know, we do have a substantial Latino community, but also we have seniors or, you know,
well, those
workers,
with disabilities.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, with disabilities or just people that, you know, don't find a place. You know, I think our mental health initiatives that we're working on also will be maybe under this. And I think, you know, it's always, I think our police department has really changed over the years, and we have a lot of officers with a background that fits our community and can reach out to them. And just, you know, we have, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we do now, and we might be collecting them under one umbrella and adding new. So it'll be a great discussion for the next council.
So you've got a new website, I guess, going up sometime today. I didn't see it earlier this morning.
I didn't look, but yeah.
To get a survey?
Yes. That's a good way for the community to give their input now, and also they can come to any council meeting, even if it's not on the agenda, they can come and give public input at the 6 o'clock hour. So I hope that people will speak up. We did have quite a few people the first, I think this is the third time we've had it on the agenda. The first two times we had quite a few community members come up and speak, and we really do appreciate that.
Yeah. You did hear from one person last night just telling you to be careful on how you pursue making this a critical priority. What was the concern?
I think it was that what I heard from him is that it was a hard thing to measure and define, and that maybe you should figure out what components, such as housing or transportation or your police department or your health department, pick one of those goals that would contribute to social equity and then work on that. And whereas there had been some discussion at the council level before about using it as a lens, so not necessarily, you know, as a lens as a social equity over all things that the city does. So that's that'll be something that we'll just have to figure out. You know, I think I heard something, you know, government is about making people's lives better, and social equity should be, you know, the government helping to make everybody's lives better.
Finally, just wanted to mention on the agenda, the Historic Preservation Award has now been changed to the Cindy Matsumoto Historic Preservation Award.
I know that was a shock and a real privilege. And as I said, I don't really deserve it, but I'm happy to take it. So,
well, it certainly has been kind of your, you know, your charge.
Yeah, and I will continue with that in the community, working towards the historic preservation of our town. So I think it's an important goal.
Yeah. So is this there's one award, or are these the many awards that the Society pans out every year?
This is the one award from the Historic Preservation Board, and they do I'm sure you've seen the pictures of the historic buildings in the City Hall, so they do a picture. They contract with an artist and put up an oil or a watercolor or whatever it might be of the historic building. So it's really quite a privilege, and I'm very excited about it.
Okay, so what's new for you? You just got more hours at work, huh?
Yeah, I think my life's going to get sucked up by, well, as I said last night, when I started, I had no grandchildren. Now I have 5 and in town. And so my 3 daughters are here with their families, and I hope to be able to spend more time with them. But then I have my business, which, you know, that can get suck up your extra time too. But I want to, you know, get out there and do some of the fun things that I didn't do before. That, you know, you didn't have time for. So I'm hoping to have a little free time to do some of the great things that are in town.
Okay.
And reconnect with people in a more casual way.
All right. Well, thanks for your 8 years of service, Cindy.
Well, thank you.
Cindy Matsumoto, KPCW News Time now, 8:45. It's 8:45. Good morning. Well, this month, Summit Community Power Works initiated the Watts Down Lights Up holiday campaign. In the studio to explain, I have the executive director of SCPW, Erin Bright. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is this program? Tell us about it.
Well, we, as you know, have been a little silent in 2017 while we waded through Georgetown and onboarding myself. And we wanted to get something done concrete before the end of the year. So we decided what happens right around now, all the lights go up. Our town becomes beautiful with the snow at nighttime, and we wanted to make sure that the lights going up were LED and the best for our community.
So how'd you do that?
So we worked with our partners Rocky Mountain Power and Super Green Solutions to reach out to some of the deed-restricted units in our community, and the line, which is just on Deer Valley Drive, stepped up, and we were able to retrofit 7 units there with full LED lights inside, outside, and holiday lights.
Okay, so just the regular light bulbs inside and outside, the porch lights and stuff, plus some festive ones?
Correct. So when people are putting those lights up, we wanted to bring attention not just to the holiday decor, but also their ladders out. They may not have switched out all those hard to reach bulbs, and now is a great time to do that.
Okay. And how was the line selected?
I worked with Mountainlands and with the city to figure out where all those deed restricted units in our community are, and with the county. And when I reached out to Canyon Corners, which is where the new Whole Foods is, there are 20 deed restricted units there. They are already full LEDs, which was fantastic to hear. So then we wanted to make sure we were also working with a community in Park City, and the line was the most responsive. So we went with them.
Great. So you got more coming online then? I mean, even without the festival, holiday festival lights?
Correct. We are hoping that in the new year, working with Super Green Solutions and Rocky Mountain Power, we will be able to continue working with our communities. Another group we did reach out to was Alan Long at Rising Star Realtors, the Silver Star Cafe, Jeff Ward, and Silver Star Ski and Sport, Tom Fisher. And that group seems to be getting on board. We're starting conversations with them. All of their plaza holiday lights are LEDs. That Silver Star Ski and Sport is a Recycle Utah Green business, so anything we can do to increase switching out their bulbs on the full scale, we will continue with.
Okay, so what's next then for 2018?
Well, that's what we're still doing our planning process. We are continuing to look at what our largest impact will be in terms of our program dollars, time to conversion. So as we move forward, we're looking at what goals and specific actions might rise to the top with the city and the county so that then we can assist in getting those conversions over, whether there are lights, furnaces, anything and everything we'll help with.
All right. So are you still on track then to become a 501c3 nonprofit?
Yes, we are. We should be hearing back in January on that status. Thank you for reminding us.
And in terms of then funding for you, that would make it easier then for people to help support the cause? And will you also receive money from Park City and Summit County?
Right now, we do not have any contracts set up with either the city or the county. As we move forward and as some planning goes on with Rocky Mountain Power and the city and the county, we are believing that through a few processes that are on the horizon to see some goals rise to the top that we will be able to implement services for within the next 24 months.
Yeah. But with both the county and city having their own sustainability departments, I mean, is there still room for SCPW?
There definitely is, because some things are just better operated and run by your local group rather than a government entity. And also at the county, we've got Lisa Yoder. She does a great job, but she is only one individual. And when you're working on the whole entire county-wide scale, there is need for a little assistance.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
We are looking for board members right now. We've had a few roll off that were from the very beginning, 2013, 2014. So if you are interested, please give me a call or check our website. Grab my email, aaron.bragg@scpw.org.
Okay. Aaron, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
The Park City Community Foundation's Giving Guide has been released, and in the studio to tell us more about that, I have the Communications and Event Manager for the Community Foundation, Deanna Rhodes, along with Tom Raffa, a board member and a part-time resident of Park City. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about, maybe Deanna, you can just give us a brief definition. What is the Park City Giving Guide?
So the Park City Giving Guide is actually in its second iteration, and it is highlighting the nonprofits that are here in Park City where people can get involved, whether volunteering or donating and giving their money. And it's really, it represents 45 of the nonprofits in this area. We selected the nonprofits based on broad appeal, fiscal sustainability. They have a high impact program and that they have good governance. And so we are just really communicating to the community the great ways they can get involved in all the great nonprofits that are here.
Okay. And then, Tom, as a part-time Park City resident, you thought this was important to do. How come?
Yeah, we have something similar in D.C., and in D.C. we're really trying to highlight the smaller nonprofits that sort of get lost. They're doing great community work, but they don't have the ability to, say, market for themselves. Here it was more the Park City Community Foundation does such a great job of working with these organizations that our firm, being one of the firms I have as a CPA firm, we vetted financially by looking at the 990s and picked the best. My big area of concern was is that my neighbors and friends in where we live in Park City were not at all involved. They just came here and thought that this was a wonderful resort town and there really wasn't anything that they needed. And as they got to know the nonprofit community, they felt this need to give and to be a part of that community. So I think the Giving Guide was the bridge to that.
Yeah, and how is that? I mean, as coming into a new community, I mean, by helping out nonprofits, I mean, does that help you feel more a part of the town?
Is that? Yeah, well, I think it's not even just being more of a part of the town as it is feeling that the understanding that there are community problems and community issues here that don't rear their heads because we have such good nonprofits. And if we're not supporting that part of the social sector, then eventually there's a deterioration in the community. And I think we just come to expect that this is this beautiful resort town we're going to come to. And a lot of these people and friends are probably going to spend more and more time here as they get older and eventually retire. So we want to make sure that we're not only a part of the community, but that we're helping the community to thrive.
Okay. And then the Giving Guide itself, I mean, what is it? It points out 45 different nonprofits. Does it have specific asks or is it just a list of what this nonprofit is and what they do?
So the Giving Guide, the printed version, is the 45 nonprofits. It highlights a couple of them with a little bit more explanation of what they do and how they do it. And it has a couple of wish lists in there. And then what's really great is, you know, in print, you have a finite number of pages that you can fill up. And so we actually have taken all of this content online to parkcitycf.org/giving-guide, where all of the nonprofits, the 45 nonprofits, are all represented with this extended content, and you can actually give right there with just a click or two.
And we kind of consider December the giving season, but you were telling me off air that realtors are actually holding on to these and handing them out to their clients at closing.
Yep. So Park City Board of Realtors has come on board again as a founding supporter of this project. And it's really great because in addition to supporting it in a financial way to actually help us be able to produce it, they help distribute it as well. So in the last version, they gave it to their clients at closing, which, again, is really great back to Tom's point to talk about, you know, someone is a newcomer into this community and they are given this piece that's really beautiful, really well represented. And they say, oh, there is more of an expectation for me to get involved and be a real part of this community. I'm not going to just come here for a couple of weeks and ski and have a great time, but I'm actually going to support these nonprofits that are in town as well.
Okay. And have you gotten some response from the nonprofits, Tom?
I think, you know, part of it, too, is if you think about it, it's our job, too, to elevate the nonprofits. So this builds community among the nonprofits and within the Park City Community Foundation itself. And I think the next steps are things like as they apply for this every year and we vet them, that we try to elevate their abilities to operate. So, for example, in D.C., one of the things we teach for the smaller nonprofits is how to write an acknowledgement letter so that they can keep up with the dollars that we're raising for them and solicit the donors year after year. So it's really more about building that community. And so the money's great, and there is a great ROI in D.C. We've raised over $40 million in the 13 years that we've done it. Last year, we probably put about $600,000 or $700,000 into it and raised $4 million. So I think the ROI is there, and it'll get there here in this community as well. But I think there's more qualitative things that happen from this guide that just really advance the sector. And when the sector advances, all of our lives are better in the community.
Okay. And as you mentioned, it is online, but also a number of physical copies that are going to be around town.
Yeah. So 11,000 copies are being distributed through Mountain Express Magazine as soon as those drop. And the Park City Community Foundation has sent out 5,000 copies as well. If you are interested in a printed version, we don't have a lot left because we did kind of mail them out. But if you are interested in a printed version, you can get them in our office.
And okay. If there's a great demand for them, we'll fund to print more.
Okay. All right. Anything else people should know?
The only other thing is that people sort of find their own individual purpose and they align with the nonprofits. The way that it is partitioned both online and in the magazine is by section. So if you're interested in the environment, you can go and find the best and the brightest nonprofits there that are working in the environment. And I think that helps a lot, too, so that you can find what it suits you the most and really where you want to spend your money.
Oh, thanks for including KPCW.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Tom Raffa and Deanna Rhodes, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
And Merry Christmas to you. Carolyn will be in on Monday and Tuesday. I'll be back on Wednesday. Have a fabulous holiday. This is Community Radio, a listener-supported KPCW Park City. It's 9 o'clock. Morning Mix is next.